Hi, and welcome to part number 9 of our basic steps for learning how to be a policy debater. And if you're on to step 9, you're doing pretty well, so congratulations. My name's Alfred C. Snyder. I'm the Edmund W. Lawrence Professor of Forensics at the University of Vermont. And I'm here today with Justin Parmet, a debate coach at the University of Vermont. Good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
And this is an area that you're particularly interested in, right?
Sure is.
All right, let's get right into it. Area number 9, we're going to talk about critiques. Critiques are a very exciting and interesting form of argument that you can use in the debate. They really give you an opportunity to engage in some personal advocacy, to take a different perspective than most people would take, or especially than the affirmative team is taking, and it allows you to really debate about some of the basic assumptions that are taking place inside of the debate round itself. What is a critique? Well, I'm tempted to say that a critique is an argument form, but instead, I think a critique is sort of a process that you go through, a process of critically analyzing the ideas, the performance, the speech, and the advocacy of the other team. It allows you to bring a different perspective. And that's where I'll start with the definition of a critique. A critique is where you bring a different perspective to the debate, a new perspective not necessarily held by the affirmative. And within that new perspective, you disagree with and question the basic assumptions that the affirmative team is engaging in, and you argue that those assumptions are either false or evil or both. And I'll just give you a very basic example. The affirmative could say that their plan is a good idea because it will make the United States more militarily strong. We'll have more military power, says the affirmative, so vote for us. A critique is where you come in and bring the opposite perspective. You say that talk of coercive power, of violence, of dominance and war is wrong, it's counterproductive, it's immoral, and it needs to be rejected. So it allows you to look at the basic assumptions of the affirmative, to engage those assumptions, to reject them, and to argue that those assumptions are either false or evil or both, and thus the negative team should win the debate. A critique's a little different than other arguments in the debate, isn't it, Justin?
Yeah, they sure are. A lot of times when people answer critique, they'll think of it as a disadvantage, but there are differences between the critique and the disadvantage. The first is that the critique is not as structurally defined as a disadvantage is, and the best example of that would be when we talk about uniqueness. For a disadvantage to be able to win you the round, it must be unique to the plan, whereas in a critique, it's a little bit different because there's a shady gray area there. You're challenging the assumptions behind the plan. Now, you should not need to prove that this affirmative plan is the only thing that is using these flawed assumptions. And so for that reason, uniqueness is not necessarily as big of a deal with the critique. That's a major difference. Another difference is on the link level. And although it's good to have a critique that links specifically to the policy action they're taking, a lot of times the critique will link to more basic assumptions behind the plan. The U.S. federal government would be a good link area that you might critique. Education policy might be something that you feel that when they come in and present education policy from the federal government, they are assuming way too many things are okay with current education policies, and then you would link to that level as opposed to the actual the action that they're taking. Mm-hmm.
It's also unique in that most of the debate arguments, the structure and the components are fairly set. But the critique process, because it brings in a new, completely different perspective, is a bit more open-ended. There are fewer lockstep, you know, you have to have the link, the internal link, the brink, the impact, or with the counter plan, you have to have, you know, non-topicality, competitiveness, mutual exclusivity, net benefits. A lot of debate arguments are fairly well-defined and lockstep, but the critique is a bit more free-flowing.
Yeah, I think a major reason for that is the critique tends to be different depending on what the critique is and what the evidence is saying. It depends on how the argument is laid out, depends on how you use that argument in a debate round.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to make you think that, that there aren't any major components or ideas that join your critique. Certainly there are. They're just not as chiseled in stone as they are for some other debate arguments. So I'd like to tell you about the components that go into a critique. Now, the critique is an argument made by the negative against the affirmative team. It could be against their policy that they're advocating. It could be against the assumptions behind their policy. It could be about the language that they're using. But in any case, it needs to do several basic things. The critique is usually argued in the first negative constructive speech. So it's an off-case argument by the negative, which is offered in the first negative constructive speech. First thing you want to have is a name, some name to call your argument. That's useful for most debate arguments. If you give them a name, then you can talk about it. It could be critical pedagogy. It could be, the critique of work. It could be current international relations of critique. You need to give it a name so that you'll be able to talk about it later in the debate. So that's the first thing you need to have, a name for your critique. Not like Fred or Harry or something else. Name it after the concept. Second thing, you need to say what your alternative perspective is. You need to introduce an alternative perspective into the debate. Now, one of the examples that I used as an impact term when we talked about disadvantages was the notion that having a job and unemployment is not necessarily good. And you can have a work critique. On the high school topic, which talks about education reform, a lot of what they say is people should get an education so that they can get a job. And a critique would say getting a job is bad. You can't just say getting a job is bad. You have to introduce the perspective, the alternative perspective that your critique offers so that people can understand it. You'll want to explain that jobs are not freedom, that jobs are part-time slavery, that you have to do what your boss tells you to do. The fact that they give you money and that you get some hours of free time doesn't mean that it's not still an incredible encroachment on your freedom. The jobs are not fun, that they are boring, that in many cases they're socially counterproductive. You get paid money for destroying the environment or victimizing other people. The point here is, not that I'm disliking work, I just dislike work that I dislike and I like work that I like, but that you have to introduce your alternative perspective. And that's something you need to take some time in doing. Second component of a critique. Third one is, you have to provide some link to the affirmative. So what if you have an alternative perspective? How does that perspective clash with what the affirmative is doing? How does it clash with their policy, with their advocacy, with their assumptions? You introduce an alternative perspective that you think is good. In the link step, you have to show that this alternative perspective is at odds with what the affirmative is saying and doing. The fourth thing you have to establish is that your alternative perspective is superior. They have a perspective that says that work is good. You have a perspective that says work is bad. And you have to explain why your alternative perspective is better than theirs. You have to defend yours. You have to show why it's superior. Fifth and finally, you have to demonstrate some implications. Or, so what does this mean for the debate? You have to explain what role this process of critique should play in the debate. You have to explain what it means. Why does it help you win the debate? Why does it mean you're doing the better job of debating? You might explain that it disproves the affirmative evidence. If it's a critique that shows that their evidence is based on false assumptions, their advocacy might fall because it disproves their evidence. It could turn their case. It could say, no, getting more jobs is not good, it's bad. It could be a reason why you have done a superior job of debating, because you've not engaged in any of these fallacious, erroneous, or evil forms of advocacy. So the basic components of a critique, and they're more fluid, and each critique can be different. It should have a name, you should state the alternative perspective, you should provide some kind of link to what the affirmative is doing, you should defend your perspective as being superior, and you should argue in implications, so what does this mean for the debate round? Justin, I know at the World Debate Institute this summer, you were working on some critiques, and many of the high school students were, and one of the most popular was critical pedagogy. And I wondered if you'd talk to us about it, talk to us about that for a moment.
Sure. Critical pedagogy is an interesting critique, and it's a specific link on this year's high school topic to anyone who reforms the current system of education without actually dramatically changing it or incorporating the ideas of critical pedagogy. For the most part, that's almost every affirmative.
What is pedagogy?
Pedagogy simply means just a learning style, and critical pedagogy is taking a critical approach to that learning style and maybe questioning whether or not the current learning style is good. It actually questions and says that it is not good. It says that the current school system is set up with something called the banking system of education. And that's simply where the teacher is the master or know-all, and the students are just there to sit and get information deposited into them. They're not turned to learn, they're not taught to evaluate that information or critically discuss that information at all. They're just learned to write it down and then spew it back on text.
They soak it up like a sponge.
Exactly. They soak it up like a sponge. And the negative then would argue that the affirmative tries to reform this current system but still leaves the banking system intact. And then if the banking system is intact, the argument says that there can never be any true learning in schools. And so the implications of this critique would be, the first is that it proves that the affirmative can never solve the problems that they're trying to solve, and they actually only entrench these problems by leaving the banking system in place. The second implication that you can use for this critique is that you should reject the assumptions that go behind the banking system of education, and because they do not try and change the current framework, they must on face be rejected because of their policy action.
Mm-hmm. So we saw how it has an alternative perspective.
Right.
It has a link to the affirmative because they're keeping this banking system that they
don't want. Right. The alternative perspective of critical pedagogy is in direct contradiction with the current system of the banking education.
Yeah, and then it argues implications as to why this means the negative lens.
Right, and it also defends that the critical pedagogy is a better alternative than the current system right now.
Well, there are a couple of different types of critiques. There are many different types of critiques. There are an infinite number of types of critiques. I think there's a couple of big categories that you should be aware because it makes a difference into how you argue them and how you defend them. And one category of critiques is the framework critique. The framework critique. You argue that the framework from which the affirmative is operating is false or evil or both. For example, the critical pedagogy argument would be a framework critique.
Yeah.
You say, your framework assumes that improving school within the current model is good, we disagree, reforming school within the current model is bad. So that would be an idea of a framework critique. Now, of all the critiques, that's probably the most common. And it also sort of engages the affirmative at the level of their policy by saying that your policy comes out of a flawed framework and thus should be rejected. But there's another very exciting type of critique.
Yep, that would be called the language critique. And the language critique kind of is exactly what it sounds like. You're questioning and challenging the language that is used by the affirmative. And now this can be either the language that's used in their plan, it could be the language that's used in the tags of their evidence, or just the evidence itself. And your argument would be that there is some sort of offensive language within their 1AC, and you need to reject them because of the use of that language. Let them know that what they're saying is wrong.
Or it could arise at any time in the debate.
It could happen at any time during the debate. A language critique, the first negative could give their speech, and the second affirmative could come up and say, your language is flawed.
So although most critiques are argued by the negative, This is the kind that can be argued by the affirmative.
Exactly.
Well, the other kind too is. But generally, we're talking about them in the context of a negative argument. But if the negative stood up and said something that you thought was really offensive, would you argue a language critique against them?
With all means, argue a language critique. A couple of major examples of language critique would be use of sexist language or racist language. Clearly, if people are using sexist or racist language, you should have every right in the debate round to let them know that that's wrong and they should be rejected for the use of their language.
And that
our performance is very important to debate, and if we're using offensive language in our performance, then that is something that should be brought out.
Right, I think that that's very relevant. The judge is asked to say, who's doing the better job of debating? And I think it's pretty persuasive to say, people who use overtly racist and sexist language, or bigoted language of any sort, perhaps heterosexist or homophobic language, or language that's offensive to different ethnic groups, or people's religious beliefs, or that generally show intolerance towards the other people involved, towards the people involved in the debate. That's a justified use of a language critique, because in order to have a debate, we really need to be in a position to respect each other and to listen to each other. And when we use this kind of offensive language, we're not allowed to. But it doesn't have to be just offensive language, does it?
No. And the language critique is an excellent way to get people to really understand the implications behind the language that they're using. For instance, you can be talking about Native Americans and call them tribes, and they might find that to be offensive, and we should be aware of that kind of language and that kind of rhetoric, the rhetoric that we use. And so using the language critique is a very effective tool to make people aware of the implications behind what they're saying.
The other kinds of language critiques I've heard of are critiques of like military language. Like a lot of times people characterize the debate as a battle, and we're killing them on this point, and we're crushing them on this point. Or it could be that they are actually advocating stronger military use of force and use of coercion. And in any case, you can argue a language critique of militaristic, pro-violent language as being bad. And once again, that makes sense to me, because a debate is completely different than a fight. In fact, what we're trying to do in debate is replace weapons with words and get away from the fight so we can solve our problems with ideas instead of with fists. So those are two different kinds of critiques. Now, just because the negative feels that the affirmative is wrong and they have a critique, it doesn't mean that the affirmative has to roll over and surrender. The affirmative, of course, should be in a position to answer the critique and refute the critique argued against them or argued against anyone on a fairly organized basis. I think there are an infinite number of ways that you can answer any given critique. I just want to suggest to you several guidelines that you could take when you're affirmative or whenever someone runs a critique against you. Here are some things that you could think about in order to find arguments. The first is, you could say that a critique as an argument form is not appropriate for the process of debate. That we're involved in policy debate, and the debate should be about the policy that's at hand, not about the language or the underlying values. It's just about the policy and whether that's a good idea. So people can argue that because we're in a policy debate, this is the wrong forum for the critique to take place. Another argument that they could make is that, well, we have our plan, you have no alternative. The critique is not an alternative, it's just a criticism, so you have to vote against it. Once again, that comes from the policy framework by saying that, you know, the critique's not a policy. The other thing you could do is to say the critique's not unique. You could say, there's military all over the place. What difference does we have a bit more military rhetoric? So those are some basic ways in which you can argue that the critique is an invalid argumentative form. Never just rely on that as an answer. Make sure that you also go to the next step and you actually engage the affirmative critique. You engage their alternative perspective. You disprove their perspective and say, no, work is joyful. Work is liberating. Work gives meaning to our lives. Work brings us together with our workmates in the workplace. You can disprove it. You can say the opposite. You can attack their perspective and defend yours. You can even try to turn their perspective by saying, a world without work? We'd all starve to death. We'd freeze to death in the winter. Nothing would get done if we didn't have work. We would be a terrible society if we agreed with you. So the second approach then is to engage the critique, to engage their perspective, to disprove it, and to turn it. The third thing that you can do is argue that there is a contradiction somewhere in the debate. A lot of times the negative team will offer a critique, disadvantage one, you hurt the military. Critique number one, military solutions are bad. A lot of times, the negative team's critique will contradict with many of the other arguments in the debate. And you need to look and see if that's happening. Because if they're trying to have a consistent alternative perspective and they go around contradicting themselves all the time, then that really shows that they're not doing the better job of debating. They may even commit what's called a performative contradiction, where their performance, right, they say, bigoted language is bad, and then they engage in bigoted language. For example, they say, bigoted language is bad, and your answers to our bigoted language argument are lame, right? Which is another form of bigoted language. We're referring to handicapped people. So look for the performative contradiction. The fourth way to answer the critique is to dispute the implications. The implications the teams will give to their critique are so self-serving. Gosh, the negative teams always try to win the debate by overclaiming things. Don't let them do it. When they argue that this disproves the affirmative case, that this turns the affirmative case, this shows that their advocacy is evil, you have to dispute those implications. If someone runs a critique against you, don't drop the implications. Argue them, or else you'll be in trouble. So there's four things to keep in mind in answering the critique when one of them's run against you. But sometimes you are the critiquer, and you want to be in a position to defend and sustain your argument throughout the debate. What are some guidelines for that, Justin?
There's a couple of things you want to do when you're running the critique. And the first thing that you want to do is you want to clearly show the link. You must win the link level. You must show that their action in some way violates the critique. Usually that's not the hardest thing to do, but it's something that gets forgotten about at times. And so you must remember to always defend the link level, always. The next thing you want to do is you need to have answers to these. The critique is a bad forum for policy debate. You need to remember that there are no rules in debate, and just because they tell you that it's a bad forum, that does not necessarily mean that it is.
Yes, never make the error of believing your opponents.
Exactly.
Believe your opponents. They're only trying to beat you.
Exactly. So you need to have arguments as to either why your critique does present an alternative, or why your critique, you do not need to have an alternative and critiquing is enough. You need to have reasons as to why the critique does not need to be unique. For instance, just because everyone else is entrenched in these military mindset and using these offensive words against us does not mean that we need to do the same thing also, right? You do not need to fall into that trap of that the critique must be unique to your plan. 10 bad things does not equal one good thing. Exactly. And the last thing you need to do when you're running a critique is you must defend and win your implications. This is probably the most important thing. They're going to always try and dispute the implications of your critique. And as Tuna said earlier, your critiques are going to have big implications. It's going to be a complete case turn or an automatic reason to reject the affirmative. And you need to defend these as to be true reasons to vote against them on this argument. You need to prove as to why it's a complete case turn. Right? If you're reading a critical pedagogy critique, you must win that critical pedagogy is the better alternative and we must reject the banking system. And defending your implications is the most important thing. Lay them out clearly in the first speech, and then in the negative speech, make the second speech and the last rebuttal. You cannot forget about the implications to the critique and extend them. Explain to the judge why you believe that this critique is a reason that they should vote negative.
Let's talk about some of the classic errors that the novice debaters make when they get involved in arguing a critique. And the one that I want to point out first is that a lot of times novice debaters don't take the time and effort to explain what their alternative perspective is. For example, if you're saying, this is the critique of school, and I'm defending the perspective of Paulo Freire, who, for example, is a very famous and well-known educational theorist, who says that, treating education just like another commodity is really a bad idea. Education needs to be seen as a personal liberating process. You can't just stand up and say, you know, we're in favor of Paul Fieri's Pedagogy of the Oppressed. Okay, now, implications. You have to explain what that means. Educate the judge. Educate the other team about your alternative perspective. Critiques are about alternative perspectives. And when you bring one into the debate, you have to explain it, outline it, make sure everybody understands it. Then you can have a debate about it. What are some of the other errors that you've seen, Justin?
I think along the same lines, you need to be careful to be aware of the difference between offering an alternative perspective and offering an alternative. When the affirmative gets up and says, no alternative, no alternative, they're not saying that you can still be providing an alternative perspective without providing an alternative to get us to that new perspective. So just because you're the negative and you do not provide a counter plan to get us to critical pedagogy does not mean that you should still not provide this alternative perspective of critical pedagogy and still use that as a reason to reject them.
You know, some experienced policy debaters who have not debated critiques have a hard time with them because it doesn't fit into the little pigeonholes they have for debate arguments. But my experience is that novice debaters warm to critiques pretty quickly. They can take a completely different perspective. What's your experience in working with new debaters and critiques?
Well, I think that the reason that new debaters can take to critiques better than more experienced debaters that have not had much experience with critiques is because they seem to make logical sense. They're not a bunch of different evidence from different authors to put some weird story together that ends up in nuclear war. They are an advocacy that you're taking, an author's stance or a couple of authors' stance, a body of evidence that has been put out about a specific topic. And so they logically follow an order much more than a lot of disadvantages would. So I think that for that reason, the novices can pick up a critique file, read through it, and really understand the evidence behind the argument, the reasoning behind the critique, as opposed to having to figure out the internal links of the dissad and the uniqueness of the dissad and how, you know, Clinton's actions tomorrow are going to affect that dissad.
Or whether the time permutation is better than just doing the plan or stuff like that. It's something that novices can get a grip on. I also think that it's a place where new debaters can develop some of their own argumentation. It's a situation where you can look at an affirmative case and say, there's something about that affirmative case that I don't like, that I really disagree with. And then you can say, well, here it is. It's this basic assumption of theirs, right, that we're always in competition with each other. And then you can research that idea and develop your own argument. So it's really liberating in that way, too. You can pick your perspectives, and you can develop new ones, and it's a great way to educate yourself.
Yeah, I think it's very important as a debater to realize that you do not need to accept everything that is presented to you, and that's what we're taught the most, and using the critique in a debate round really helps us learn that skill of not accepting everything that is told to us, and you need to just get down to the assumptions behind their plan and challenge those.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the critique is a very exciting part of modern debate. I think it has real clash about basic ideas. It's hard to dodge the critique. I mean, if you're in favor of keeping school the way it is, then you're in favor of keeping school the way it is. Yeah. And so it allows for a real clash. So try it. You'll like it and develop your own alternative perspective, because the great gift of debate is that it teaches you how to think for yourself and how to debate your own perspective. And I think that's what will make you a happier citizen, a more productive citizen, and more successful everywhere you go. Well, thanks a lot for sitting in, Justin.
Hey, thank you.
All right, we'll see you down the line.
Good luck.
We'll see you later, too. Keep on studying. Tune in for part 10. Stick with it. Keep on debating. And don't give up.